Hi, and welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballengee. Happy Good Friday if you're celebrating. Happy Easter weekend to you. Or if you are non-denominational or don't celebrate Easter, happy pre-Masters weekend to you. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballengee. You can get a hold of Golf News Net on some social media services, but we all have the handle Golf News Net on all of them. Whether we use them is another question. But you can find all of our work on golfnewsnet.com. Listen to our shows in the GNN Radio app. And you can find our video content for your Amazon and Roku devices at those respective stores. We are presented by 2Under, and 2Under makes some of the best darn underwear in the world, and you know how I know because I am wearing it as I am literally recording this. Got some in the mail for my friends at 2Under. Want to thank Jack for that. Jack Curry is the man, and I am wearing them right now and enjoying the Joey pouch, which is protecting my assets, and the no drip. Tip, which means if you're out there on the golf course wearing the swing shift underwear and you kind of have to use the bathroom and you kind of jiggle a little bit, you don't have to worry about getting wet or any of that kind of stuff ruining your next few holes because of that special feature. These are made of great materials. They're designed for specific purposes, swing shift specifically for golf and that kind of activity. They have workout underwear, nighttime underwear, daytime underwear, business underwear. That's more of the daytime. They've got great stuff for loungewear. They've got bags, socks, all kinds of things. Great new t-shirts as well. So head over to 2under.com, the number 2UNDR.com. Use the promo code GNN20. And you're going to save 20% on your entire order. Again, head to 2under.com, the number 2UNDR.com, and use that promo code GNN20 and save 20% on your purchase. We have a guest this week. That's the second half of the show. We recorded one earlier in the week with Dean Snell. Dean's been on the show before. He owns, created Snell Golf. He makes awesome golf balls. He just came out with a new line of two golf balls, which is a spin-off of the original two golf balls that he came out with. Originally came out with My Tour Ball, three-piece ball, a lot like the Pro V1 in a sense, because he had his name on the freaking patent for the Pro V1, the original. Worked with TaylorMade forever developing their ball line into something respected in the industry from the ground up. And then he had a two-piece golf ball called the Get Some. Well, based on the feedback he was getting and from his consumers, and he sells direct to consumers, so you're getting dozens of golf balls for under $35 a dozen, which is unbelievable at this quality. But based on the feedback that he got, he needed to come up with a second ball. So he wanted to help golfers who struggled to get that kind of greenside spin and also struggle to get spin with their short irons and even maybe their mid irons to an extent, but basically 8-iron and in, and wanted to help them be able to have stopping power. So he's created a 4-piece ball. That's called the MTB Red. He took the original My Tour ball. That's now called MTB Black. Still has the Get Some, and he's selling all three of them. And we had a great conversation about what he's been through in his journey. This is his fourth year of running the company, and all of the stuff that goes into researching these golf balls, creating them, listening to feedback from golfers like you. It was a cool conversation. So we'll save that for the second half. The first half, I just got back from Houston yesterday afternoon. I went down there for a few days to spend some time with Steve Elkington, who is the 1995 PGA champion, two-time players champion. He is one of the founders of Secret Golf, which if you haven't signed up for Secret Golf, you should. The links will be on our website. Prominently displayed. We have a good relationship with them. We have this is the second year working with them. And Secret Golf basically is the best darn lineup of people to ever learn golf from. And that's major champions, professional golfers, men and women, major champions, PGA Tour players, Web.com Tour players, Champions Tour players, legends of the game. We've got LPGA major winners, multiple LPGA major winners, and just a lot of different types of golfers, voices, approaches to the game to learn from. And we've been working together, as I said, for a couple of years, talking about instruction content. And we want to deepen our relationship, teaming up a little bit more. So you'll see more from us on that front. But I went down to Houston to spend some time with Elk and also to see the Houston Open. I'd never been to the Houston Open. I've been in the city of Houston for exactly 8 hours once as part of a business trip before I was a golf writer, actually just a few months before I became a golf writer. That's kind of what drove me to the edge in part. And I really not know much about the tournament other than I watch every year. It's been in this pre-Masters slot for 10 years, and They've tried to set it up to be like Augusta National in the extent of the best they can. And I just wanted to kind of get a sense of what was going on down there, especially because without a title sponsor, this could be the last year for the tournament. They need a title sponsor. The Houston Golf Association, which has does a really great job with the event, and you can tell just being on the grounds by the way how an event is run. You can tell. It doesn't take a whole lot to figure it out if you've been to enough of them. They run a great event, and they went deep into the whatever reserve money they've got, and they didn't disclose how much that is, but I'm guessing it's lots of millions of dollars to be able to put this tournament on this year without a sponsor. After Shell announced in 2016 that 2017 would be their final year as the title sponsor of this event after 26 years. They were one of the longest running continuous active sponsorships on the PGA Tour. I think that the leader right now is Honda. I think they've been around into the 30 plus year range at this point with the Honda Classic, but Shell was in it for a long time, and they said, we're just not going to do it anymore. And Houston is a city with 25 Fortune 500 companies, and not one has yet stepped up to write that check to be the sponsor of this event moving forward. So next year, it has an uncertain date, the Houston Open does. It's going to lose its spot as the pre-Masters tournament. That's going to the Valero Texas Open, which in my mind is a mistake because TPC San Antonio is in no way a good preparation for the Masters. But that's what Valero wanted when they signed a 10-year extension. And they have a permanent sponsorship, basically, or at least for the next decade. So that was one of the conditions. They wanted that date. So Doug Ferguson, the Associated Press report, Houston, if it's still on in 2019, would then be the week before the U.S. Open. And that's a big if. I mean, you need a sponsorship. I can't imagine the Houston Golf Association doing this out of their pocket again. That's way too much money, and I would think that hopefully after everything that happened with Hurricane Harvey in August, there's been reporting that a lot of these companies that could be capable of writing these checks, they're just getting back into their office spaces. They're just getting back to business as normal, and so they're trying to worry about that before maybe they worry about a big sponsorship opportunity. But in the years after Hurricane Harvey, there's still going to be a need to give to the community. People are still going to struggle to recover. It's going to take years for Houston to get totally back on its feet, if it, it kind of ever does. It city changes, but you understand what I mean. And I just wanted to see what it was like. And I was very impressed by Houston. I mean, Houston's a golf town. There's so much history in Houston. There aren't many places where there is a state or even a municipal, certainly not a municipal, golf association as well done, as prominent, as important as the Houston Golf Association. And they, like I said, knew how to run a tournament. They took care of the media. They took care of fans. They were doing the right thing. And I just wanted to see, get the vibe. Was this the end, or was maybe this the potential for a new beginning? I don't know the answer to that. I'm not sure I walk away with the answer. And I don't think the Houston Golf Association knows, even after this week, where they're going to be at. They're still trying to hold out hope that they'll come up with something, but the PGA Tour wants to come up with its full schedule for next year by the Players' Championship, which is in 6 weeks. And a lot of things need to be settled by then. What's happening in Houston, the sponsorship situation for Colonial, because they have a one-year consortium of four sponsors basically in it $2.5 million each to sponsor the tournament for a one-year deal. So Colonial either has to decide we're going to let this thing go, or they have to find a way to raise $10 million for next year with one title sponsor or a collaborative effort again, whatever they want to do. So they may get away from that. We have Tiger Woods' the national tournament in my backyard here in D.C. This is likely its last year unless some kind of miracle happens or unless the tournament fundamentally moves. I mean, there's talk of a Detroit event. There has been for years. But Quicken Loans, which is based in Detroit, could be that company that steps in and says, hey, we want to sponsor this event. We just don't want it in D.C. We want it in Detroit, where we are. One of their marketing pitches is we're revitalizing the cities of Detroit and Cleveland, where our employees are based. So, of course, they would be willing to pony up something in Detroit. That would make sense. So that could change. You've got whatever happens with Colonial, if it's still around, it's going to be either before or after the PGA Championship, which moves to May. And then you're going to have the Byron Nelson either before or after at Trinity Forest for at least a couple of years, which, based on what I've been told by some native Texans, is that that's not particularly convenient compared to TPC Las Colinas for either the fans or the players. So that may not necessarily be the best venue for that tournament for a few years, because it's tough to get to and you can't stay there. So the folks at Trinity Forest, who want to basically use this to get a major championship someday, they may have to go a particularly long way to prove that they can handle a major championship if they don't get massive crowds. So that's another question. And there are a whole bunch of other question marks on the schedule, but Houston seems in trouble. And I hope that's not the case. I mean, I will tell you why. Because I felt like the golf community in Houston really wanted it. They weren't the blah about whether it stayed or went. And you had guys like Chris Stroud and Johnny Vegas and Bobby Yates and Elk was part of it. Martin Piller is a Texan who lives in Arlington with his wife, Trina Piller. But, you know, a number of Texans who rallied together for this cause after Harvey and raised $1 million in a day. Now, $210,000 of that $1 million came from a wealthy donor who paid for one golf lesson with Tiger Woods. But still, they raised $1 million in a day to help the Houston community. But through the Houston golf community, did that. I think that's powerful. I think that means something. I think it's an indication of what the Houston community can do within golf. And so that the Houston Golf Association deserves the opportunity to have that platform and impact philanthropic efforts to help children, to get them into the game, or not, you know, whatever. But I walked away hopeful, but not expecting things to work out. And then we had the opportunity on Wednesday to go to Champions Golf Club, where Elk is a member, and Mr. Jack Berg Jr. is the principal. Him and Jimmy DeMeritt were partners forever, and this Houston Area Golf Club is going to host the 2020 U.S. Women's Open. It's hosted the Ryder Cup. It's hosted the U.S. Open. I mean, it's hosted like 50 really important golf tournaments, whether amateur, professional, whatever. But it's been the site of some amazing history, and we had the opportunity, thanks to Elk, to sit down and have lunch with Jack Berg Jr. Won the 1956 Masters and PGA Championship, won a couple dozen PGA Tour events, I think it was, 17, 18 altogether, whatever the number was, a lot. He's an ex-Marine, he's 95 years old, he is a golf legend, he made a name for himself in business, he oozed golf history, and he was so cool to talk to. And it was kind of the right mix of an older guy who doesn't care what anyone thinks about him anymore, because he's proven to everybody, especially himself, what he is capable of doing, which is pretty cool. I always like people like that. But he also said what he thought and shared his wisdom in a way that wasn't trying to bring you down. He was trying to raise you up. And he talked about that explicitly, about not trying to talk down to the next generation, but trying to put out your hand for them, to lift them up, and to welcome them into what it means to be successful. And if you're willing to do the right things, then you can learn. And if you're not willing to do the right things, then you have to wait your turn. And I very much believe in that because of what I do. I believe that if you do the right things enough over time, you will get your turn. And sometimes you have to seize your turn, yes, but the good things come to those who do things the right way. And then we got to spend some time in his office in the clubhouse, and it's just it's golf history. I mean, everything from every big event ever held there, signed pictures, all kinds of pictures, memorabilia, the putters that him and Mr. DeMeritt used to win their biggest tournaments. I mean, they're just these beautiful old mallet-style putters with leather grips and hickory shafts and Oh, they were just stunning. And they're just as good as putters today. I mean, they're unbelievably awesome. And you could see pictures of different celebrities that he had become friends with over the years, Mr. Burke. And there was this one picture I'm not going to forget anytime soon of the actor James Garner. And I swear to God, he did not look human. He looked so Hollywood, he didn't look real. And just super chiseled chin, buff. I mean, it was insane. And I will not forget that picture anytime soon. And the whole facility was fantastic. It's a 36-hole facility. Great driving range. Just great atmosphere. It wasn't uppity. It was very friendly. Very welcoming. Lots of fun. That locker room is awesome. If you ever get the chance to go into the Champions Golf Club locker room, you need to. It is one of the coolest hangs in golf, and maybe that's a piece we can do. But it was one of the more fun golf experiences of my life because of everything that went into it. And hopefully some great stuff will come out of all this. I mean, I'm sure that it will between us and Secret Golf. And hopefully can repay the favor to Elk and to Vito Palermo, who's also the CEO of Secret Golf. If they can come to D.C., we will do the same thing. So I don't really have any particular analysis. It was just kind of storytelling. But based on what I've kind of been able to gather, it seems like how we understand the PGA Tour schedule is in for a big change. And some of those changes will be good. Some will be maybe not as well received. Some will be expected. Some will be unexpected. But I don't think that the PGA Tour is going to stand to lose events necessarily, you know, in terms of a net number. Some will come on, some will go away. But it does still seem like there's maybe a change in the sponsorship market. That maybe 12 months ago or 18 months ago, it seemed like, wow, I mean, the PGA Tour could have a schedule an event every week. And now it seems like there may be some more reluctance from companies to make that annual check cut out to either a golf association or a golf club or directly to the PGA Tour through an event to be able to sponsor it. And I still think that there is a sponsor bubble out there. I still think that there is a someday rights bubble taking shape. Although I've had some really interesting conversations with people who've been at these tables, negotiations over rights deals. And they say, well, no, there's not a sports bubble. Not yet, at least. And they say that because despite whatever is happening with television ratings and across the board, they're down for every type of event. Super Bowl all the way down to the most menial thing you would watch on cable. They're all down, basically. And they're down by about similar percentages, except the Super Bowl and big sporting events like it hang on to more of their audience. They depreciate less of their audience because they're live, because they have to be seen in real time to be totally appreciated. And that's why sporting event values continue to remain high in the advertising marketplace and with television providers and networks. And so, you know, we're not too far away. We're a couple of years away from the end of the PGA Tour's deals with both NBC and CBS on the network side and with Golf Channel specifically for their cable coverage. And there's this ongoing discussion of whether the PGA Tour will go to its own network, whether it will turn PGA Tour Live into the PGA Tour digital network and then do some stuff with that, whether they'll stick with cable, some hodgepodge like they've got today. What is that all going to look like? And I think what's happening now in the sponsor community will have some way of informing what happens on the television side of things. Because a lot of these deals right now, basically every big sponsorship deal is you kind of fund the purse, you put up money for the tournament, you put up money for charity, and you buy what you get in return other than the very nice exposure that you get from the audience, you also get television time. You get television ad buys with the PGA Tour. Well, if less people are watching TV, does that have less value? And so the question will be, can these sponsors, moving forward as their deals come up, will they get something else of value from the PGA Tour? Will they get digital data? Will they get their customers' data from people who attend the tournaments? What will they get that is of modern value, maybe equal to what they're paying right now to get all the stuff that they get now as a PGA Tour sponsor? It'll be really interesting to see, because there's going to be a big schedule change coming to be unveiled in 6 weeks. And that's going to tell us a lot, I think, about the next couple of years and what that could mean for a television contract and what golf and golf consumption is going to look like for the next decade after 2021. All right, we'll go ahead and take a quick timeout here, and then we will go ahead and air our interview with Dean Snell. Let's talk again about our friends from Health IQ. They've been sponsoring us throughout the year, and it's been a pleasure to have them on board. And if you've been hearing me talk about them, Health IQ is for life insurance, what you do with car insurance. You shop around for the best rate when you look for car insurance, and you look for discounts based on your good driving. You don't get tickets, you don't get into accidents, you have a good driving record, you don't drive dangerously, you get better insurance rates. Same thing happens with Health IQ and life insurance. Health IQ works with a variety of exclusive rate partners, high-rated insurers like John Hancock, Transamerica, go down the line of the best life insurers there are, and they work with those companies to save you between 4 and 33% on life insurance if you are a health-conscious person. So if you walk when you play golf, if you're a runner, if you belong to a gym, you're a cyclist, you run marathons, you're a vegan, you belong to a running club, lots of different ways you can demonstrate that you are a health-conscious person, you can get better life insurance rates. You get better term life insurance rates. Health IQ can do that because their customers have physically active bodies, and that means they have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to the less active person. So those are the people that are on the high end of the rate pool. They don't do stuff. They have hypertension, lots of health problems, things that could be prevented or at least lessened by a healthy lifestyle, by a health-conscious lifestyle. So Health IQ rewards those people who live a health-conscious lifestyle with lower life insurance rates. 70% of their exclusive rate clients get approved at the top rate class, and that means good things for you as the consumer. Means you can get a longer term, it means you can get a higher benefit, or you can just save money. All those things are good, however you choose to do it. I'm a big advocate for term life insurance. It is relatively inexpensive, no matter the term that you choose, and it is a great, great way of preparing your family for the potential unexpected. So if you head over to healthiq.com/19 and get a free quote and see if you qualify. One more time, healthiq.com/19. All right, so let's get back into the show and let's get to the interview for this week. Dean Snell is going to join us. Dean Snell is the founder and owner of Snell Golf, and he's been doing this now about 4 years. His resume speaks for itself, but his name is on the patent of the original Pro V1, worked with Titleist and Acushnet for years developing golf balls, made the switch over to TaylorMade, and worked for them for 15 years developing their golf ball line into what it is today. And in 2015, said, you know what, I'm out at TaylorMade. I have ball design in hand. I want to create golf balls for the average golfer, not the tour player, not the best players in the world, but for you and me. And so he created his two-ball line with a direct-to-consumer model that blows pretty much everybody away on pricing, but doesn't skimp on quality. He came out originally with the My Tour ball and the Get Some, the three- and the two-piece ball. Now he has the four-piece MTB red, the three-piece MTB black, and still has the Get Some. Again, all still at incredible prices, under $35 a dozen. And he's just a super fun guy to talk to about the history of golf balls, golf ball development, all the things that go into making the thing you use on every single shot in your round. And so I want you to enjoy this conversation with Dean Snell.
Dean, thanks for joining us again. We're so glad to have you on the show. First, I want to talk a little bit about your new golf balls, the MTB Black and the MTB Red. A couple of years ago when you made your debut, you came out with My Tour Ball, three-piece ball. It's been awesome, obviously, to get some. It's still around, the two-piece ball as well. But for 2018, you decided to kind of splinter off MTB into two different lines. So can you give a sense of when is it that decision making in the first place?
Oh, it's been, like you mentioned, a couple of years with one product. And one of the things I'd like to do is spend a lot of time reading a lot of the feedback that we get from, you know, a lot of the readers and on the social media sites and on the blogs. And I make a chart, and in that chart I kind of put like low spin, high spin drivers, irons, wedges, putters, fields, and quick. But when you start to hear the same thing from many consumers telling you maybe look at this, maybe look at this, that's a voice. And I take that voice and then started to do some prototyping. So if we lose some customers based on just having one product and try to address a little bit bigger audience for us, that's kind of where we came up with kind of expanding that line out. So the MTB Black is pretty close to what the MTB was. So if you like the MTB golf ball, that's what Black would be. We dropped the core compression a little bit, so we lower the driver spin, makes the feel be a little softer. But from, 150 yards in, it's pretty much the same kind of performance. But the biggest voice that we heard were, a lot of players aren't able to generate enough spin on approach shots. So if they hit greens, they don't necessarily get to hold them. So we created a four-layer urethane golf ball that addressed that issue. So the MTB Red has a 7-8-9 pitch and wedge A-wedge spin that's going to be higher than Black. So if you're looking for a little more spin into the green, that would be the Red. And then it's got a urethane cover, so similar around the green. So the Black is low compression, lower driver spin, similar performance as MTB. And then the Red is a higher approach shot spin. So that 150-yard to about 90-yard shot has increased spin over the Black.
And how does the driver spin on the MTB Red compare to the Black?
The driver spins are going to be close. In an actual robot test, which I haven't seen any players be close to being a robot type of performance, but in the actual robot test, it's about 100 to maybe 150 RPMs higher at certain conditions. We test it across every driver speed, and then we do different launch angles, different spin rates, just to make sure we cover, about 90% of the golfers out there. And, it will be slightly higher, but not significantly higher. When you look at a driver spins being in the 2,500 range, if you're 2,400 or 2,500, you shouldn't see a significant difference with respect to distances. But, again, drivers, you're able to do a little bit of tweaking if you do have something that's your issue. But your scoring zone's really 150 yards and in, and it's kind of where you want the performance of the golf ball to fit your game. So we kind of created two levels of performance to address that issue.
So would you say the MTB Red is better for speaking specifically to the driver, to a player who hit kind of a low spin drive and needs maybe a little bit more to kind of prevent maybe some knuckling and things like that when they're missed hits as well?
Yeah, that's a good point. If you do have somebody that's very low spin, a lot of times, especially if the ball speed's a little faster, a lot of times players might have a tendency to see a little bit of knuckling since the driver spins are getting down so low now. One of the advantages of having low driver spin is it gives you an opportunity to increase loft, and that's really what you should do. If your driver spin is low enough, take the advantage of the loft because you're only going to hit the ball further. But if you do have a case where someone's driver spins low, and sometimes a lot of players looking at a lot of loft is not appealing to them, so they might not want to add loft to it. So the spin rate being 100, 150 RPMs higher would probably help that.
Generally speaking, what's kind of the customer base of Snell Golf? Is it a better player? Is it a wide spectrum of handicaps? I mean, what kind of range of player tends to gravitate toward your golf ball?
It's pretty much a wide spectrum, but the average is probably somewhere around 12 to 14 handicap is what we've seen. But for the better players with the MTB, we did a demographic study on it, and the ages were, in the mid 40s. But the MTB product, was really designed where we wanted to take spin out of full iron shots where better players had problems getting to back pins. And also when you reduce that spin out of those iron shots, you also have a better performance into the wind. And pretty much every time you play golf, there's some kind of wind. So downwind, everything is always good, but into the wind is where it can be a problem. So we really designed that product to be, very long with all clubs, but controllable into the wind with spin rates on full irons that are good, but they're not really high. So if you get a player that maybe not able to generate as much spin to hold a green. So I would say if you play like a Pro V1 type of product and you hit the ball and you like the way it hits and spins and holds the green, that would be MTB Red. And if you play the current MTB we have today, and you like the way that holds the green, you know, then it would be black. If you say, geez, I'd like a little bit more, then it would be red. So it's pretty, I don't really like to compare one ball to the other. I kind of like to compare it to your game. So it's dependent on what your game is. If you're looking for approach shot spin and you want it to have a little bit more, that would be red. And if you're happy with what you have today, you know, that would be black.
Speaking from personal experience, I'm super happy with red. The black is great. I mean, old MTB was great as it was, but the red has been unbelievable for me. I mean, I'm a high ball hitter, and I'm a low spin hitter with the driver. So, you basically just spoke to exactly the kind of golf that I play. So no wonder I love the golf ball.
The feedback's been very good on red. You know, there's a lot of people that actually, you know, they like urethane golf balls. They like the performance. They like the feel. But they, you know, it's hard enough in golf to hit greens. So if you're 150 yards or 100 yards out and you hit it, you at least want to have a chance to make it stay on the green. So if you can add some performance there, you know, that's what red will do.
Having done this for a couple of years now, you've been around since 2015, so this is what, four years into this concept, or fourth year into this concept of Snell Golf. What are the things that you are most proud of, other than the product, about Snell Golf?
Well, it's funny because when I started it, it was, I thought that the whole company was it was started small. It was self-funded. I had some friends help me out and say, "Oh, give a chance to give." You know, I've been fortunate to work and develop golf balls for the best players in the world out there for many, many years. And then to give something back to let average people kind of have that type of level of, you know, materials and processes and technologies to maybe improve their game, and also the education part of it. I think one of the things that I'm happy to be able to do is spend a lot of time doing a lot of educational things for a lot of consumers. My pet peeve is always to say now 5 yards longer, now 5 yards longer. It gets old, and I think I did that for Top Flight my 10th year in golf, and I think the driver would have gone 485 yards if you added them all up. So, you know, it's not really exciting to consumers, but if we can educate people and teach them certain things and how to test and how to fit the ball to their game and what temperatures to kind of, you know, keep the golf ball stored at, and, you know, wind conditions and launch conditions, you know, those things I think is what's kind of been exciting and more interesting for me, you know, to be able to touch people. And then I've created a lot of very nice contacts, you know, on social media sites and in the blogs and in the different arenas in that area where, you know, people send a lot of stuff to me, and I communicate, you know, head-to-head with them or one-on-one with them too. So I think that part of it's been pretty good for me. I didn't expect it to be that you know, well-received, but there's a lot of people out there that, you know, that have a lot of questions, and if I can answer them, you know, that's what I like to do.
Have you exceeded your expectations so far? I mean, when you first started, okay, I'm going to make my own golf ball company. Where did you see yourself at this point, and are you kind of past that?
Yeah, so the first year we did it, you know, in a lot of stuff that we've done, we've had to control how much, where we go and what we do with it, because it's inventory controlled, and we can't put ourselves in a position where everything gets put out there in some manner, and all of a sudden you're sold out, and it's a repeat purchase item, and no one comes back. So we really try to control what we did to grow comfortable that fit us, and make sure we you know, you learn, and you make some mistakes along the way, and you work on them and improve them. But I think the first year plan that I had, we did in 6 months, but the second year we grew 400%. You know, which is, you know, we had some money now. We were able to buy some inventory. We ended up going into a building, bringing all of our – we had three different locations when we started. We put everybody into one place, you know, and then last year we continued to grow, you know, at a pace that's much greater than – you know, if you have a 10% growth in a business side to it per year, that's pretty good. And we've grown about 440% in the last 2 years. So, it's going pretty good. It's somewhat scary, you know. And the best part about this, Ryan, in all honesty, is, you know, my family's with me. So, you know, and my kids are with me. My daughter-in-law works with me. My wife's there. So we go in the morning, and I look at all the invoices. I print them out. I sign. If I'm in the office, I'll sign a thank you note for the people. I appreciate their support to help, you know, grow, since it's a small company. And I do that every day if I'm in. So I make sure that that we try to see, you know, how things are going. And then we all go in the back and we pack and ship, you know, the products, turn the music on and have a good time. FedEx pulls up at 4 o'clock every day and takes the daily orders out, and then we do the same thing the next day. And we've added quite a few people into the marketing now and the customer service side. So locally, we're supporting a lot of charity events as well. So it's been kind of fun. You know, I've enjoyed it and learned a lot, you know, just not being an R&D engineering kind of guy. It's a little bit of a business side to it, but I want it to be fun, and it has been fun. And, you know, the support that we're getting from everybody has been very, very good and much appreciated.
What's been the biggest challenge? What is something that you didn't foresee happening because of just past job experience as opposed to running the whole show? What's kind of been the biggest challenge of going from R&D and that development side of it to, all right, this is your whole thing, this is your entire baby?
There's a couple of them. One of them is money. You know, when you start, we started small, self-funded with some help from friends, and when you buy the product that you have to come in, you have to pay for it up front. So, you know, and the products are in factories, as some of them are made overseas, and we have to bring things in, which take time, so you have to fund and up front everything up front, and now you're like, oh boy, you know, hope it sells so we can buy some more. And fortunately enough, that's worked, and the help I've gotten from friends and family have been outstanding, which has allowed us to kind of cross that line now. So now we're put in a situation, you know, that's a little better. But I think one of the biggest challenges that we had was I wasn't really familiar with the whole direct-to-consumer online business. So, you know, I went to a local company here in my hometown, and a couple of young guys that helped me develop websites and do things. And then the first time something happened where a test result came out, and we ended up winning the best overall product, and you know, the phone was blowing up, the website was crashing, and we didn't really even know what to do. You know, the snow went out at the time, it was in March, and things were going crazy. So we've outgrown the website that we started with. We've gone into a, you know, a new Shopify system, which now can handle pretty much everything. But learning that kind of stuff, saying, okay, everything's going to be good, and then the first time something really hits and everything crashes out, and then people aren't happy, and, you know, now you have to come up with solutions to fix those, which are unexpected problems that you have. But that's what drives your business, is your website. You're able to, you know, ship to people. If you can't do that, you don't have a business. So a couple of little things, money and website stuff has been interesting, but today we're in a much better position.
When I play golf with Snell balls, people inevitably ask me, who's Snell, whose golf balls are these, you know, all the basic questions about it. And I can answer them, but it's not my company. How often when you play golf do you run into somebody who hasn't played your golf balls before, and what's that conversation like when you tell them, I made these?
Yeah, it's getting more and more. You know, I travel a little bit less than I used to, but still, you know, I have a house down in Florida. I go down to Florida quite a bit, and then I've gone to a couple of events that we've helped to, you know, to some charity things and things that we've supported. So traveling side to it, it's been interesting where, you know, a lot of people will come up and ask, especially when you're at a member guest or something like that, where, you know, the people will come over and say, hey, heard about it, the product, you know, can you tell me about it? So, you know, it for us, it's an independent, direct-to-consumer business. There are some other competitors in the category, but we have a little bit of a unique side to it where, you know, I was fortunate to work with Titleist and TaylorMade for 25 years. And they're two of the best companies, you know, in golf. So, you know, being able to understand the products and understand what it takes and understand what tour players are looking for, and now understanding what consumers are looking for, and put some of those thoughts and ideas into designs, and being able to make prototypes, you know, on our own, test prototypes on our own, and then come up with products. It's interesting, when we first started my career in golf, it was always designing products for the tour. So, you know, I'd spend times at the tour players' homes. I'd play in some tournaments with them. You know, became very close with their families and traveled a lot, and it was fun. But when the end results happened, you know, you made a golf ball for them, and when they would win the Masters or win the U.S. Open with it, it was kind of a rewarding thing to, you know, to feel like you were part of it. And so the golf balls were made for them, and the players that buy products, which is the consumers, they would buy the product that was designed for those players. And now I really think, you know, if golfers are going to have an opportunity to try to get better, maybe a golf ball that's been designed for every single tour player might not be fit the game that's designed for guys that don't hit it like tour players. So I can take the feedback today of what we get from consumers of all different handicaps and ranges, and I can use that information that I've had in the past to use core technologies and mantles and covers and dimples and create products that fit, you know, the game that's more made for you, the consumer, and not so worried about the tour. We've had 5 tour players call us to play the ball. They wanted it on tour, but we respectfully declined because, you know, there's a financial commitment to it, and that's not our business model. Our model is, let's stay out of the tour. Let's make golf balls for you, the consumer, and let's price them for you, the consumer. And if we get into the tour category, we have to start raising prices, and then we're in the business model of a Titleist and TaylorMade. So they have a nice plan with their business side to it, and ours is more direct to consumer. And our goal is to bring performance to the golfers by keeping it at an affordable price.
Kind of speaking of the difference between players and, you know, amateur golfers, recreational golfers, and tour players, what crossover is there? I mean, I always feel like the game is completely different for a high-level professional or high-level amateur than the average recreational golfer. So, I mean, I guess from a design perspective, how much different was it going from, all right, I'm working on a golf ball for a Dustin Johnson-type player, a really long hitter who can just do everything, versus your average 20 who hits about 215 off the tee and struggles to make better than 5 on every hole?
Yeah, it's different. So when you work with the tour players, we would start – when I first started in golf, when it was Tour Bellotta coming out and then Titleist Professional came out, it was always driver and 8-iron spin that were measured, and that was kind of what we would work with the players on. And now it changed. It went, a lot of the better players that I'd go see would start right around the green with the little chips, little short game. So it's very interesting that the best players in the world now today test golf balls right around the green first, and then they work their way back. And knowing that when they get to the driver, they probably have the ability to tweak their drivers or have something made for them that can tweak their performance a little bit. So it's important for them to have that short game control. When you did work with tour players, I can remember Jim Furyk telling me one time, you know, Dane, something's wrong here because I hit a 4-iron or a rescue club and the ball's falling out of the sky. Well, I've worked with thousands of amateur golfers and not one of them has ever said one thing about their 4-iron to me. You know, so there's a big difference. So I really try to teach people, you know, when you're a little bit higher handicap, and I'm not even talking about real high. I'm talking about you go out and you're a 7, 8, 9, 10 handicap. You're not going to hit your driver in the center of the face every time. So don't test golf balls with drivers and then pick one. You know, if you hit a drive and it goes pretty good, your scoring is going to come from, you know, a higher handicap is from 100 yards and in, and, you know, a single digit, you know, 7, 8, 9 handicap might be 150 and in. But that's where you want to really work your game, and that's where you want to test golf balls, and that's where you want to see which one fits what you're looking for. So having higher handicap players or amateur golfers, you know, some single-digit players, working and testing from 100 yards and in is something I recommend for everybody to do. Tour players, we have to test, you know, from tee to green. They want to know everything for every club and every launch and every spin. And they're that good, and they can tell that. So they're tweaking their irons to a specific yardage, where average golfers might tweak it to a range. You know, if it's 150 yards, it might be an 8-iron or it might be a 9-iron. But if it's 151 yards, you know, the tour player knows that's a 9-iron. So there's a difference. There's a difference in what is. But when you start to design products and you can get people to test closer to the green, I'm not even saying that every player should play high spin golf balls, because there's a lot of people that have that bump and run shot. I want that ball to feel a little softer and pitch a little higher. So there's different levels of golf balls out there for different players, but really take the time to test them from 100 yards and in. Find which one you like, and then don't worry about the distance off the tee. They're all going to go pretty similar.
Well, for people who actually want to test golf balls and want to find the right one for them in the Snell family, what's the easiest way that they can get into the Snell family and start testing with MTB Red, Black, or even get some?
So what we've done is one of my biggest pet peeves in golf for 25 years was when you'd launch a new product, someone would give you a two-ball sleeve. And your first one would go in the woods and your second one in the water and the ball sucks. So, you know, you don't want to, you're never going to play it. So I've always, it's always kind of been like, even one sleeve has always been a question. So we developed a test pack. So if you want to try the tour balls, you get six golf balls of red and six golf balls of black. And I made a little card up, which kind of teaches you how to do the testing so you can see where the differences are and find which one you prefer. So you can do that, and it's the same price. You know, we don't add any price to it. Doing it, then you get two sleeves of each, and it gives you enough golf balls to play enough holes to really try to see if you can see a difference. And then the other thing you can do is, if you say, okay, I want to test a tour golf ball against a two-piece ball, you can buy that test pack in the tour ball and two sleeves of Getsum. Now you really separate the balls out even further. And for higher handicap players, I recommend doing that. So when you're out there doing the testing, if you say, geez, I like the way that ball comes off lower and checks, or I like the way it goes higher and bump and runs out, that those two balls are going to show that performance on. I like the softer feel, the firmer feel, you know, the chips and putts, something in there you like. And if you can't tell the difference between those two, then just buy the cheapest one, because your game's not there yet to understand. But keep playing, and eventually it will be. But performance in golf balls is going to help you improve your score. Anytime you can add a little spin, especially around the green, you might have an opportunity to stop that wedge shot or that chip shot 5 or 10 feet closer, maybe take a three putt away and help lower your score. So the performance there is going to help you, but if you're not at that level of your game yet, you know, then buy the one that's most affordable.
Well, Dean, thanks as always for coming on. Your advice is great. I'm so happy your story continues to be a good one and a fun one to track, and hopefully we can keep being a part of that for you guys. So thanks again for being on the show with us.
Oh, I appreciate you having me, and anytime.
Thanks to Dean Snell for being on the show again. He's been on the past, and he's always fun to talk to because, frankly, he says exactly what he thinks, and that makes for the best podcast guests. People who say exactly what they think, and they tell you the truth. And Dean's one of those guys. So thanks to Dean for being on. Head over to snellgolf.com, snellgolf.com. You can get those trial packs he talked about, or you can just dive all in and get dozens of golf balls right away. They also have 6 dozen packs where you can even save more money on your per dozen cost. It's just fantastic value. And we'll do a little bit more with Snell throughout the year and some giveaways and some other things, so please stay tuned to that. Next week on the show, probably basically on Tuesday, so a couple days from now, we will do our Masters preview show. We'll get through all of the different storylines that we want to cover that actually mean something, not the ones that don't mean anything to anybody. And we'll try to figure out who's going to win this thing and really get into the first major of the year, because spring is officially here and you should be downloading the Masters Tournament app if you haven't already done it for your Apple or Android devices. If you listen to our show through your Apple device on iTunes, please give us, or your podcast app, please give us a 5-star review. We always appreciate it. It helps us reach more people. And head over to golfnewsnet.com in the next couple of days. I didn't get this activated last week, but in the next couple of days we will set up our public offering for our new forums. They're going to be available to everybody for free, and we'll have special forums for our GNN Plus members, but we'll have forums to talk about stories, topics, questions, all kinds of stuff. Have a back and forth that isn't dependent on you being on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook. Not the biggest fan of Instagram or Facebook, and Twitter is kind of a toxic world, so wanted to create an environment where all of us can come together, talk about golf or other stuff, which is fine, and have a safe space of sorts to feel like you're not going to get slammed by some troll from Russia. Okay, until next week, I'm Ryan Balaji saying thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.